This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another hour of old-time radio crime. Our first story this week is from the Epic Casebook, featuring Inspector Carr. We'll hear their episode from April 4th, 1968, titled Death Among the Sleepers. After that, it's Call the Police and the Porter Case, their story from June 3rd, 1947.
The makers of Epic Pure Sunflower Oil, Purine and Pret Cooking Fat, Yum Yum Peanut Butter, Maple Margarine, and Niblet's Cheese Twists present the Epic Casebook. In which Inspector Carr investigates.
Good evening. Browsing through my casebook of crime, she who is dear to me asked what kind of murder story I was going to include this week. I told her it concerned the killing of a woman and that trains and railwaymen were involved. She reminded me that it was but a few weeks ago that I broadcast a story of a man who was murdered in a railway compartment. However, I justify tonight's theme of murder investigation because I believe, ever since the steam engine was first invented, trains have been a source of fascination for us. Largely because there's always an air of mystery and secrecy about trains speeding past at night. And also because people who use trains become a sort of self-contained community for the duration of the journey. I think it is this air of mystery that prompts small boys to have an ambition to become engine drivers, since it means going into the unknown. Having justified my choice of story tonight, let me tell you about it. I've called it Death Among the Sleepers. The investigation began, as far as Scotland Yard was concerned, with operations reporting the finding of a woman at the bottom of a railway embankment.
Inspector, a call has come through from the Lincolnshire CID asking for assistance.
Lincolnshire, eh?
Yes, sir. All they've sent through is that a body was discovered at the bottom of a railway embankment about 8 miles south of Grantham.
How much preliminary investigation has been done by the Lincolnshire boys?
Don't know, sir. Would you like us to go there?
No, don't bother. Get through to movement control, find out the next available train to Grantham, make them aware of my arrival.
Hello there, Inspector Carr. Long time no see.
Hello, Hudson. Nice of you to meet me.
Pleasure.
Yes, it has been a long time, about 3 years,
Sorry to have dragged you all the way up here, but you boys are much better equipped to handle a complicated investigation such as this.
You're too modest. Now, this woman was found beside the main line, wasn't she?
Yes. Two railway gangers were walking along the line, tapping in the wooden blocks that hold the rails to the sleepers, when...
Thank goodness I'm not doing this job by myself. I go stark raving mad. Walk a yard, stop, tap, tap. Walk a yard, stop. Boy, it gets monotonous.
Never mind, Pete. The end's in sight.
Yes.
Look out there. Step aside.
Looking at?
Down there, the bottom of the embankment. Can you see it?
Yes.
What do you make of it?
Why, it's only some rags.
What, there's red hair?
Whoa, what do you mean, red hair?
It's a body. A woman. Come on.
Oh. Horrible. What a mess.
Must have been a pretty woman, too. You stay here. I'll go get hold of the police.
On the scene in a matter of minutes. It's obvious that the woman, whoever the woman was, she was either pushed for the train or she fell out.
I see. And what does your police surgeon say?
Well, we checked against his estimated time of death, which was between 7:30 and 8:30 last night. We checked with the train authorities.
Any luck?
And more than that, the fast train from Crewe was traveling along that point at the appropriate time. And what's more, the train attendant says that a woman answering her description was a passenger on it.
Well, I've been looking at the description operation supplied to me. I've got it here.
Yes.
Height 5'8", weight approximately 10 stone, green eyes, auburn hair. You know, there are hundreds of thousands of women who'd answer that description.
Oh, that's true enough. What you weren't told is that we found her bag since reporting her death. It was found in a thicket just behind the body.
That's interesting. It should help.
It does in one way. There was a ticket from Crewe to London, so she was on the train all right. There's nothing else in her bag that could identify her as a person.
Oh, dear, that's a pity.
If you'll come through, I'll show you.
All right.
Here it is. Here's the clothing.
Lacerated and torn. Looks rather good quality.
Well, no question about it. We'll trace the woman through these clothes, if nothing else.
What's that over there? Is that the handbag?
Yes, that's it. Oh, the usual things, you know, lipstick, powder, feminine fripperies, £3.12 in cash.
Anything else that I can use?
Not really. Of course, if you want me
to... No, I'll take care of her. I think the first thing to do is have a word with the railway people.
Yes, that ticket was issued yesterday morning at Crewe. I checked with London. They're one ticket short, which means that ticket found in this woman's bag is the one issued for that particular train.
I see, thank you. At what speed would the train be travelling at the point where she was found?
At approximately 75 miles an hour.
It's a horrible way to die. You received a report from your employees, I take it?
Oh, yes, of course.
Any likelihood of it being an accident?
Inspector, when a train is travelling at such a speed, a person will have great difficulty in opening the door against the wind. She either committed suicide or was pushed out, but not to be caused by an unfortunate accident.
Thank you. Oh, we're having one of our artists create what they think the woman looked like before her face was so badly disfigured. The copies of this picture will be in your office within an hour. I'd be grateful if members of the crew, ticket collectors and so on were asked to identify her.
Well, naturally, Inspector, the Railway Administration will do all it can to assist you in your investigation.
However, the response from the artist's impression of the picture was of little help as far as tracing the woman was concerned. While she was unrecognized, no one could give us any information that would assist us in learning her identity or what happened on the train to cause this unknown woman to be found dead by a railway embankment. However, the artist did not draw his picture in vain. Car speaking.
Operations here, Inspector.
Oh, what have you got for me?
A woman found on railway line, identified from picture as a Mrs. Nancy Fordley, 32 Half Moon Street, Crewe. Divorced, one child.
Right, Ops.
Very good, sir. Shall I organise transport?
Yes, please. By the time I'd reached Crewe, my local colleagues had all the information I required. The husband of the dead woman was a Mr. Michael Fordley. I was driven to his place of employment. He rose from his office seat, a tall, slightly stooping figure, somewhat balding, with eyes that had a gentle look about them. Gentle and sad. Please, don't get up. I'm sorry to trouble you at your place of employment, but time is of the essence.
Yeah, I understand. When Sergeant Henderson came to tell me about it, I couldn't believe it. I haven't told Gertrude. Inspector, I don't know what to do.
Oh, at 6 years of age, the shock won't be too much for her.
Poor little Gertie. Perhaps they'll give me custody. She's at boarding school, you know, 4 miles from here.
Did you continue to see your ex-wife?
Oh, yes. Not by design. Crewe may be the railway junction for England, but to us locals, it's just a village. We were always bumping into each other.
When did you see her last?
Oh, no more than 7 or 8 days ago. I ran into her in a pub.
So I understand. You were heard to threaten your ex-wife.
Oh, she promised I could see my daughter regularly. She was trying to turn Gertrude against me.
According to the local police, she lived rather well. I suppose you were paying her alimony.
Yes, but I'm not exactly overpaid as chief clerk by Crewe Engineering Works. She couldn't have lived on what I paid her.
What am I to make of that?
Inspector Carr, I expect you to make of it what you will. You're a man of the world.
You mean men?
I mean just that.
Well, there is a very remote possibility of suicide. Was she in any kind of trouble, do you know?
Nancy, suicide? The idea is ridiculous.
Mr. Fordley, had your ex-wife any special man friend?
I don't know if special is the right word to use, Inspector. But the whole of Crewe knows that Norman Simmons was, shall we say, her protector.
Norman Simmons, thank you. Oh, do you know his address?
You must be joking, Inspector Carr. Didn't you notice as you drove down the street, Simmons Land Development Company, Simmons Garage?
Oh, I get the message, Mr. Fordley. Oh, I must ask you this. Why did Mrs. Fordley divorce you? You see, I had to look into your background.
I let her divorce me because she asked me to. It's as simple as that. I knew that she'd fallen out of love with me, kept telling me that our marriage was a mistake, so it was no good hanging on to her. I gave her grounds for divorce. Perhaps I was weak. Shouldn't have let her go. You may as well know it, Inspector. I haven't got over it yet. That's why this has come as such a shock. You see, deep down in my heart, I always felt there was a chance that we might get together again.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I know it's silly. But somehow the fact that she was killed whilst we were divorced makes it harder to bear. I suppose you think I'm talking nonsense.
No, I don't think you're talking nonsense. I understand perfectly. Mr. Norman Simmons, you say? Norman Simmons proved to be the antithesis of the bereaved ex-husband. Where Fordley was sad and beaten, Simmons' personality was the epitome of a good-looking, successful businessman whom life had gazed upon with a kindly eye. Particularly in stark contrast was his bouncy cheerfulness.
Well, well, the famous modern Sherlock Holmes has descended upon us. We are indeed honored. Welcome to Crewe, Inspector.
Thank you. No doubt you were expecting me.
Aye. Why should I, Inspector?
A close friend of yours is found dead by a railway embankment. Her identity has become known, causing the entire community of Crewe to be seething with speculation and excitement and gossip, linking her name with yours, Mr. Simmons.
Only mine.
Frankly, Mr. Simmons, your name seems to be more prominent than the others.
They're wrong. I now prefer fast motor cars to fast women. I got disenchanted with Nancy Fordley months ago. You've been described as the famous sleuth of the murder squad, but there's been no mention in the paper that murder had been committed. Was she murdered?
That's what I'm trying to find out. Most of the medical evidence suggests it was a case of murder. Have you any idea why or who?
No, not as a fact, but if you want me to hazard a guess, I'd say that if any man had reason to push her off the train, it was her ex-husband.
Why do you say that?
Well, I suppose you've been to see him. I should imagine the reason would be all too apparent. She drove him into the ground. It's these weak, pitiful men who turn out to be killers, or so my storybooks tell me.
You shouldn't believe all you read, Mr. Simmons, and by the same token, a good detective never believes everything he hears. For instance, local gossip has hinted that you were the cause of their marriage breakup. That she was in love with you then.
Oh, that's what she told him. Nancy pretended to be in love with me because she'd outgrown the poor sap. Our affair was over long before then.
When did you last travel to London by train, Mr. Simmons?
Oh, come off it, Inspector. She and I had some fun together, and that was that. I haven't traveled by train to London for over a week. If you're looking to me as a possible suspect, you're wasting your time. Why don't you check? Every booking clerk, railway porter knows my face.
It does your heart good to bake a maple cake, then see them ask for more.
Feather light, fine textured, and rich tasting. That's how your cakes will turn out every time you use maple margarine. Maypole margarine is rich in flavor, rich in vitamins, too.
It does your heart good to bake a maple cake, then see them ask for more.
Maypole.
It's got lift. It's got lift. Purine pastry's got lift because Purine is pure. Purine pastry is light, fluffy, and full of lift.
With Purine Pure Cooking Fat, you get the taste of your own good cooking.
Of course, Norman Simmons' attitude was just a little too forced to be true. His ebullience and overconfidence was meant to impress me with what? His Devil McCare attitude to life? His innocence? I decided to spend some time with one of the most fruitful sources of information, the landlord of the local hostelry.
It was a terrible business. I hear it coming to her, to Nancy Foley. Why, she used to carry on in a pub sometimes. You know, making fun of poor Mike, as the ex-husband, you know.
What about Simmons?
Oh, I think she made a match there. If you ask me, he was the only man she really went overboard for. I don't think it was money either. Ruthless swine is Simmons. He certainly got away with the women. Oh, yes.
And who was Mrs. Fordley's current boyfriend?
It's a funny thing. She didn't seem to go about with one of the locals lately. Wait a minute.
Yes, what have you thought of?
Yeah, some months ago she asked me if I knew a district called Urn Hill, seeing as how I come from London originally.
Thank you. Thank you, landlord. I think that explains something. I think I'll have another word with the station master.
Went up to London quite a lot. She did almost every week.
When did she return?
Well, I couldn't tell you exactly, but I know this. She was always here for the weekends. Used to bring her daughter home from boarding school.
I see. Well, what about a suitcase? Did she used to come onto the railway platform with a suitcase?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that. Not the sort of thing anyone would notice, is it?
No, I don't suppose it is. Oh, how far am I from Half Moon Street?
Oh, it's not more than 3 minutes' walk from here.
Using a skeleton key, I entered the tiny terraced house occupied by the now dead woman. Whatever her morals, no one could question her pride in her house. It was spotlessly clean, and in the room that she would describe as her parlor was a framed portrait of her daughter, a smiling, happy little child. Upstairs, the bedroom gave an appearance of neatness. With the inevitable feeling of distaste, I went through her private effects. There was little of value. No love or threatening letters. No diary to reveal her reasons for the frequent trips to London. And then I came across a receipt, which was to save us many hours of questioning. Yes?
Operations here, Inspector. The receipt for 6 months' rent at Langley Flats is in the name of Oliver Danbury.
Yes?
Married, 3 children, owns the Danbury Garage at Norwood.
Married, 3 children,
That's it.
Things are hotting up. Thanks, Ops.
About that suitcase.
Sell the lost property office, not to bother. There wasn't a suitcase. Mrs. Fordley had a dual establishment. That's why she could stay overnight in London without having to take any accessories with her. Get X Branch to find out whether Danbury was away from work at the time she was killed, whether he'd taken a train going north. He's obviously suspect number one.
Very good, sir.
I think I'll be a little kind to the man. I'll question him at the garage. Mr. Danbury, I'm inquiring into the death of a Mrs. Nancy Fordley.
I wondered when the police would be on to me.
Why do you say on to you?
As soon as I saw that artist drawn in the paper, I knew that my life was over.
Because you killed her?
Because of what? You don't think I pushed her off the train?
How do you know she fell from a train?
Well, because I always go round to her flat. She never turned up. I wonder what had happened, and then 2 days later I saw that drawn of her in the paper.
When we published the artist's impression in the newspapers, we did not know her identity. Why didn't you come forward?
Well, it said that the police, that you people were anxious for information concerning her identity. I hadn't got the guts. I was afraid my wife would find out what had been going on.
What do you mean, going on? Were you in love with Mrs. Ford?
I hated her.
Hated her? Yet you paid the rent for her flat in Herne Hill. I've been going through her bank book. She's been getting regular remittances. Weren't they from you?
Yeah, I kept her. You won't understand this. I didn't love her, I hated her, and yet I wanted her. I couldn't get her out of my system.
Was she blackmailing you, Mr. Danbury?
Sometimes. Sometimes I'd tell her to go away. It was a torment. I know I've been weak. I've been unfaithful to my wife, but yeah, I loved her. I've got three wonderful kids. Every time I'd be begging with my little finger, I'd be running out. Oh, excuse me.
Were you on that train?
No, Inspector.
Where were you between 7:30, 8:30 on Tuesday night?
I was having supper with my wife and kids. Please, does my wife have to know?
Mr. Danbury, I'm not concerned with your morals, nor with your domestic relationship. If I find it necessary to check on your alibi with your wife, I'll do so. Despite my threat, my suspicions concerning Oliver Danbury began to fade. It seemed extremely unlikely that he would travel all the way to Crewe, book a ticket back to London, and board the train in search of his mistress in order to kill her. And so, I was back to square one. And then I remembered something that I should have taken into consideration from the very beginning. Cursing myself for being such a thick-headed fool, I started from scratch.
Yes, sir?
Put me through to ops.
Going through. Operation, sir.
Oh, Carr speaking. Get through to Crewe. Tell them I strongly suspect Norman Simmons of killing Nancy Fordley. I don't believe she was on that train at all.
But
me no buts. Now, there's a good chap. We've got all our times wrong. She was killed between 7 and 8:30, but that doesn't mean that she was murdered at the spot where she was found. In the meantime, I have another word with Mr. Danbury. Ah, Mr. Danbury, I want to... Relax, old boy, relax. You're off my list of suspects.
Oh, thank heaven. It wasn't for myself.
I haven't time for your unctuous self-pity. You deserve the shock you've got. Now, here are some amounts. These paying in slips were taken from the Herne Hill flat. There's one here for £100. Did you ever give her £100 in one sum?
£100? Of course not. I mean, I'm not that rich.
Significantly, it was in cash. Someone was being blackmailed. She seemed quite a character, didn't Mrs. Fordley?
And to think
yes,
that I was...
my friend. If you'd carried on your relationship with this woman, you'd have gone one way. Talking about ways, I think I'd better hire me back to Crewe. I don't think I've ever seen so many passengers, Station Master.
Yeah, not surprising, Inspector. This is the main railway junction. You might call this the nerve center of the railway system.
You remember I asked you if you were able to recognize Mrs. Fordley as being one of the passengers? You said yes, but you didn't sound very sure.
Well, she...
She usually caught that train to London,
eh? Yes.
But you're not sure, are you?
Well, Inspector, that's the fast train to London. Carried over 800 passengers. It's the longest train in operation, and furthermore...
I don't feel too bad, Station Master. According to her description, there was nothing outstanding. In fact, I remembered saying at the time many women were of that height, weight, and colouring.
Thank you for letting me off the hook.
Before we were able to identify Mrs. Fordley, one of our artists made an impression of her face, which was totally disfigured. Did you see it in the paper?
Yes.
Now, when you looked at it, did you think that's Mrs. Fordley who lives in Crewe?
No.
That clinches it. Because when this was shown to the guard and the train attendants, they thought they recognized her because there must have been a dozen women on that train answering to that description. In fact, Mr. Station Master, I'm willing to wager my non-existent bowler hat that Mrs. Fordley was never on that train.
But, Inspector,
all
she was
fine. Station Master, I have a feeling that the answers to all the questions will soon become available. Mr. Simmons, I'm looking for an answer to a vital question. I think you can supply it.
I gave answers to all your questions, Inspector, the last time you were here. Don't tell me you haven't crossed me off your list of suspects.
Mr. Simmons, when it comes to an investigation of murder, we have at our disposal a vast network of machinery.
What do you mean?
I'm trying to suggest that we both can save a great deal of time if you answer my question truthfully. Where were you between the hours of 7:30 and 8:30 last Tuesday night?
I've already told you I wasn't on that train.
That isn't what I asked you, is it?
At home, having a drink.
All the time?
Yes.
You weren't, you know. At 7:40, that super-duper glamorous sports car of yours that you're so proud of was seen by a radio patrol man and by Sergeant Watson of the County Mobile Police to be travelling towards Grantham.
I don't possess the only Loxton sports car in the country.
No, of course you don't. Why didn't you tell me that Mrs. Fordley was blackmailing you? I have a sworn statement from a cashier at the Crewe National Bank that you drew 100 one-pound notes from your bank the same day as Mrs. Fordley deposited a like amount in one-pound note.
I don't know what all this is leading to.
Don't you? What a horrible thing to do. Murder's bad enough, but to disfigure the woman's face to make it look as though she fell from a train.
Look here, Inspector. I've stood just about enough from you. Are you charging me with murder? You know that a sports car speeding towards Grantham isn't sufficient grounds for a prosecution. Just because you failed in your investigation, you're trying to make me a stooge, I think is the word.
You should have been a bit more careful, you know. Those wild-growing brambles. Didn't you notice the nick in your jacket?
In my jacket.
And all that soot and dust. Lucky it didn't rain. Perfect footprints. And fancy handling the woman without any gloves.
I didn't mean to. Really, I didn't, Inspector. She came round here, taunted me. Told me that she was on her way to the station. She knew I was going to get engaged to Sir Robert Anderson's daughter. I picked up that brass paperweight. I just went berserk. Then she was dead. A reserve railway seat ticket fell from her pocket. It was then that I had the idea of taking an accidental suicide beside the railway.
All right, come along with me.
Well done, Carr. I might as well tell you that the railway authorities are very relieved. And it turned out to be an accident. The dead woman's executors would have a large claim for damages on behalf of the bereaved daughter. Let's see, she was found dead last Tuesday night, and it's now Friday morning. Quick work.
Quick work, you say? This case would have been solved in 48 hours if you and I had noticed a piece of evidence we'd overlooked. We wouldn't have wasted time questioning porters, station master.
Oh, what was it?
Well, you've gone through the dossier. And you, listeners, were told all the evidence gathered during my investigation. What was it that made me switch suddenly? Remember that I declared that I'd have to get back to square one? You know what it was? We're not sure? Listen to the commercial, and I'll be back to tell you. Well, listeners, what was it? What was it that I had overlooked during the preliminary investigations? It was this. If you remember, we heard that the train was travelling at a speed of 75 miles an hour at the point where the body was found. Yet, Inspector Hudson himself told me...
We found the handbag. It's found in a thicket just behind the body.
Get it now? If a woman is thrown from a train travelling at that speed, A, it's extremely unlikely that she will still be clutching her handbag, and B, in the unlikely event that she did so... the bag would be thrown some hundreds of yards away from the body. Certainly it would not be discovered behind a thicket where the body was found. A foolish mistake on Norman Simmons' part. Oh, the moral of the story. Confucius says, fast car with fast woman cause man to lose throttle. Good night.
The Epic Casebook was produced by Michael Silver for the makers of Epic Pure Sunflower Oil, Mipole Margarine, Yum Yum Peanut Butter, and Niblet Cheese Twists, with Hugh Rouse as Inspector Carr.
Rinso presents Call the Police.
Attention, Homicide Department. Flying squad detail. Murder suspect in your zone. Close in according to instructions.
Between you and the evil outside the law, between you and the housebreaker, the kidnapper, the murderer, stands the policeman of your community. He gives up his sleep that you may sleep unafraid. He gives up his safety that you may be safe. And if need be, he gives up his very life to protect yours.
The Lever Brothers Company, makers of Triple Action Rinso, bring you Call the Police, a new series of realistic radio dramas inspired by the courageous work of police departments all over America.
This is Police Commissioner Bill Grant. In the files of the Ashland Police Headquarters are thousands of different case histories. The one I just came across is listed as number 36-99. I remember that as the Porter case. That all started in a little place just outside of the city. A dog kennel run by a man named Porter. One rainy spring morning, a 1932 Packard touring car drove up to the Porter house, and two men got out.
Morning.
Porter?
Yes, I'm Mr. Porter.
My name's Bliss. This is Mr. Langford.
How do you do, Mr. Bliss? Mr. Langford?
Nice little place you got here, Porter.
I'll raise the finest dogs in this county.
That's so?
As a matter of fact, we just got a new litter of Airedales. Make you a good price.
Funny coincidence, Porter. We got a little information, and we're going to make you a good price.
What are you talking about?
$50,000.
And you better grab it at the price, pal. The kind of stuff we're marketing can jump 10,000 bucks overnight.
Now, what are you trying to sell me?
Like I said, information.
Nothing I want to know that's worth $50,000.
Yeah, but there's something we don't think you'd want other people to know.
Is this a joke?
I doubt if your wife would see it that way.
What's my wife got to do with this?
Plenty, Mr. Porter. Plenty.
Why, this is some kind of lousy blackmail racket.
Mr. Porter, please.
Look, Porter, Langford and me are registered at the Rex Hotel, and we ain't going to breathe a word to a soul if you drop in on us before midnight tonight.
With $50,000.
I haven't got that kind of money, and if I did have, you wouldn't get it.
Your wife's got $50,000 in her own name. And don't kid yourself that we ain't going to get it.
As I got the story from Porter, he didn't know how to broach the subject to his wife. It wasn't until he finished his third cup of coffee that he worked up enough courage to say,
Ginny.
Yes, dear?
I've never asked you any questions about your past.
No, Eric.
We've had kind of a silent agreement to let bygones be bygones. But I have to ask you now.
What do you want to know?
Do the names Langford and Bliss mean anything to you?
Bliss? Langford? No, Eric.
Are you sure?
What do you mean, am I sure?
Now, please, Jenny, I've never asked about your past until now, but Bliss and Langford are forcing my hand.
How?
They want money. Lots of money. Every cent you have in the bank.
For what?
Blackmail. Well, Jenny?
All right, Eric. I've been in jail. I didn't tell you about it before because I never dreamed you'd have to find out. I moved to another town and changed my name.
Then how could they have found you here?
There's a photograph of me in the police lineup. I've tried for years to get hold of it, but I couldn't.
So that's what Bliss and Langford are trying to sell for $50,000. Jeannie, I know where they're stopping. I'll give them a chance to listen to reason.
People like that never listen to reason.
Then I'll take matters in my own hands.
Yes, Mildred?
Miss Porter, I want to get the breakfast dishes. I hope the cream wasn't sour, Miss Porter, but that milkman never comes when he's supposed to.
How long have you been standing in that door, Mildred?
Well, just for a second, Mrs. Porter.
You heard what we were saying, didn't you, Mildred?
No, Mr. Porter.
You sure?
Yes, Mr. Porter. I didn't hear a single solitary word.
The maid's name was Mildred Connors. She'd been in the Porter's employ for over a year, and she wasn't the kind of a girl to let grass grow under her feet. 90 minutes later, she had persuaded Sergeant Maggio that her business was urgent, and she was in my office.
And their names are Bliss and Langford, Commissioner.
Uh-huh. And you heard Porter say that he was going to kill them, is that it?
Not in so many words, but that's what he meant.
Well, what did he say, Miss Connors?
He said that if they wouldn't listen to reason, he'd he said he'd take matters in his own hands.
Uh-huh. I see.
Well, it scared me to death. When I walked into the room, I started talking about something else right away, and when they asked me what I'd heard, I said I hadn't heard a thing.
Why?
It's dangerous to know too much.
Mm-hmm. All right, just keep this to yourself, Miss Connors, and I'll get in touch with you.
You can depend on me, Commissioner. I came right straight here. I thought it was the safest thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Miss Connors.
Yes?
The safest thing is not to listen outside of doors.
Why?
I'll get in touch with you, Miss Connors.
plus for me, Commissioner?
Yes, Mayor Joe. I want you to give every hotel in town a check.
What name?
Two of them. Bliss and Langford.
Bliss and Langford. Okay. Say, she wasn't bad, huh?
Huh? Who?
That dame that just came out of here. You mean you didn't notice her?
Would you believe it? I didn't.
Oh, ease up, Commissioner. Ease up.
I'll ease up, Maggio, when I've learned all the tricks of this police commissioner job they just handed me.
Could be better than the Marines, eh, Commissioner? Maybe it was nicer when we were stuck on Saipan with nothing to do but drink sake and duck Jap mortars.
I don't know, Maggio. It's a tough routine. But on the other hand, it has its satisfactions.
Oh, that reminds me. One of the satisfactions is waiting outside.
Who?
That beautiful little thing that works down in the criminal psychology department.
Oh, Libby Tyler?
Who else?
Tell her to come in.
Okay. I'll check on Bliss and Langford. You can come in, Miss Tyler.
Thanks, Sergeant. Well, morning, Commissioner.
Hiya, Libby. Sit down.
Thanks.
How are things in the criminal psychology department?
Good enough for me to tell you that she's an overt hysteric.
Who is?
The girl who just walked out of here.
What exactly does that mean, an overt hysteric?
Among other things, it means I wouldn't trust a word she says.
Well, she just said a lot of words, Libby. She told me that Eric Porter had threatened to kill a couple of men who were trying to blackmail his wife.
I bought my spaniel puppy from Mr. and Mrs. Porter, and I can tell you right now that neither one of them is psychologically equipped for murder.
But, Libby...
As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if you found that the blackmailers she told you about are totally non-existent.
Oh, excuse me, Miss Tyler. I've located a Ralph Langford registered at the Rex Hotel, Commissioner.
Oh, yeah?
Room 809.
Thanks, Sarge. Well, Libby, how would you like to come along with me and have a look at a totally non-existent blackmailer in the flesh?
This whistle means suspicious characters at 8th and Elm. But this whistle...
Of course, that's Rinso White and Rinso Bright. Till I tried Rinso, I never dreamed a wash could be so dazzling. Just look at my linens. They're like snow. And all my washable colored things are so bright and fresh, yet I've washed many of them dozens of times.
Well, ma'am, there's a reason for Rinso's top results. You see, Rinso has a triple-action formula that gives you a special soapy-rich base, an amazing suds booster, and a marvelous grease chaser. Rinso's soapy-rich base makes deep-driving suds that get out stubborn dirt fast. Rinso's suds booster means heaps of suds, even in hard water. And Rinso's grease chaser goes after grease and grime, helps prevent yellowing of clothes, yet is easy on hands. So ask for Rinso for a dazzling wash, a wash that's... Rinso White and Rinso Bright.
When Libby and I got to the Rex Hotel, we checked at the desk and found Langford was in. We walked up two flights and knocked. Langford! Langford, open up! I want to talk to you.
Try the knob.
It's open. Come on, let's go in.
Oh, there he is, Bill.
Yeah, having himself a card game. Sorry to interrupt your solitaire, Mr. Langford.
Look, he's got the ace of diamonds in his hand and the king's open. He's missing a big chance.
He's going to keep right on missing it.
What?
Take a look at his face, Libby. Mr. Langford is dead. The man sat there with a dazed grin of pain on his face. When I touched him, he toppled sideways out of the chair. There was a powder-burned bullet hole right under his left ear.
Oh, Bill, how awful.
You know, Libby, the maid told me a straight story.
What are you looking for?
Letters, photographs. Mildred Connors said Langford was blackmailing Mrs. Porter. I'm going to get a line on whatever it was he was holding over her head.
Well, wouldn't the murderer have taken it, Bill?
Maybe he couldn't find it.
Where could it be?
In the desk here. The bureau. Maybe in the suitcase.
Or the closet right by the bed.
I'll take a look in there.
You know, Dr. Holtzbein, the Viennese psychologist, says that the personality of settled people like the Porters is simply not compatible with murder.
You better write Dr. Holtzbein and tell him to think it over, Libby.
What do you mean?
Look who's here in the closet. Libby's jaw dropped a foot when she saw Mrs. Porter step out of the closet. Naturally, Mrs. Porter protested her innocence to the housetops, but we took her in anyway. 20 minutes later at headquarters.
Yes, Commissioner?
Maggio, I don't want to be interrupted until I buzz you back.
Okay, Commissioner.
Now then, Mrs. Porter, let's have it.
I've told you, Commissioner Grant, I've told you twice, just the way it was.
You walked into Langford's room at the Rex and found him sitting there dead. Is that it?
You've got to believe me.
And then you heard Miss Tyler and me at the door and you ran into the closet. Why?
I knew I'd look guilty being there.
Mrs. Porter, I'm afraid you've got a servant problem.
Servant problem? What do you mean? I've had the same maid for over a year.
Mm-hmm. Her name's Mildred Connors, isn't it?
How did you know that?
Look, Mrs. Porter, Langford was murdered around 11 o'clock this morning. A few minutes before 11, Mildred Connors walked into this office and told me that you and your husband were discussing the fact that two men, Langford and Bliss, were trying to squeeze you for blackmail.
She told you that?
And she specifically heard your husband say that if the blackmailers didn't listen to reason, he'd take matters into his own hands.
No.
Is it possible, Mrs. Porter, that your husband got to the Rex before you did? That you found Langford dead because your husband killed him?
No. No, it's not possible.
Why not?
Because I killed him.
You want to sign that?
Yes.
What did you do with the gun?
I threw it out the window.
Into the courtyard of the Rex?
That's right.
Yes?
Maggio speaking, Commissioner. Somebody here to
see. I said I didn't want to be interrupted.
It's Mr. Porter.
Well, tell him to wait. I just got a confession out of his wife.
You're kidding.
Why?
I just got a confession out of him.
What?
He says he killed Langford.
Commissioner Grant.
Eric, what are you doing here?
I walked into Langford's room at 5 minutes after 11 this morning, Commissioner.
No,
I...
you mustn't believe him.
It's no use, Ginny. I did it.
He's lying. I did it, I tell you.
Commissioner, I insist that you release my wife
no.
at once.
No, I won't listen.
Take it easy, Mrs. Porter. Take it easy now. Nobody is guilty yet. We just have to hold somebody for the record. And it might as well be your husband. Take him, Maggio.
Eat your lunch, Bill.
I'm not hungry.
Too much breakfast?
Too many confessions.
It's hard to know which one of them is telling the truth.
I don't know.
Have you thought that maybe neither one of them is?
Yeah. Still, we found Mrs. Porter on the scene of the crime.
And you let her go?
Not far, Libby.
Is she being followed?
Naturally. Besides, I can't be too definite about any of this until we find the murder weapon.
Any idea where it can be?
Mrs. Porter says she threw it out of the window of Langford's room.
So?
So Maggio's detailed a few of the boys to have a look for themselves.
And if they find the gun?
We let Porter go, wrap up his wife for murder.
Hey, Commissioner.
Oh, Maggio. Have a cup of coffee?
No, but I could use a bottle of aspirin.
What's the matter?
I just heard from the boys.
Yeah?
There's a closed courtyard at the Rex, Commissioner. There's an iron door that hasn't been opened since 6 this morning. Anything thrown into that court from 6 on would have to still be there.
Well?
The boys went over every inch of it.
No gun?
No gun.
And that's it.
That's what, Bill?
Mrs. Porter was lying to shield her husband.
And you think he murdered Langford?
I think he probably loves his wife, Libby. I think that he probably figured that she would kill Langford if he didn't beat her to it.
Is this the go-ahead, Commissioner?
Yeah. We'll get back to the office and indict Porter for murder.
Hello, Miguelesco's lunchroom. Just a minute. It's for you, Commissioner.
Oh, okay, Mike. Thanks. Hello.
This is Mrs. Porter.
Yes?
I want you to release my husband at once, Commissioner.
Well, we've been all over this before, Mrs. Porter.
Yes, but we haven't been over this. What time was Langford murdered?
Sometime between 10:30 and a little after 11.
It couldn't have been later or earlier.
Only by a few minutes, one way or the other.
Good. I want you to call Judge Hartley in the Chamber of Commerce building.
Why?
Because he'll tell you that my husband was there with him from 9 o'clock this morning until noon.
Well, Maggio?
And he just let Porter go.
The alibi checked?
Tight as a new pair of shoes. First, Mrs. Porter's guilty. Then Mr. Porter's guilty. And all of a sudden, neither one of them's guilty, and we're holding nobody.
Stop pacing.
It's a wonder I ain't out cutting paper dolls. I'm going outside where I can pace in peace.
I know just how he feels.
I don't.
What do you mean?
I'm not surprised at all.
Oh, Libby.
Face the facts, Bill. No two people who try to confess to a crime in order to protect each other are very likely murder suspects.
Well, whom should we suspect, Libby? The city council?
We should suspect the only one true criminal type left in the picture.
You mean Bliss?
Yes. Langford's pal. Nobody thinks of him.
I've had a squad out looking for Bliss since 11:30 this morning, Libby.
Oh. Well, I was wondering why...
Yes.
Maggio, guess who's here, Commissioner?
Who?
Bliss.
Who brought him in?
Nobody. He came in on his own steam.
Send him in. Looks like we have a caller, Libby.
Commissioner?
Bliss?
Yeah, I want to see you.
I've been wanting to see you. As I understand it, you drove into the Porter Kennels this morning with a $50,000 blackmail proposition. Is that right?
Langford talked me into it. He said it was going to be easy money.
Didn't turn out to be so easy for him, did it?
You can say that again.
And you're afraid you'll be next?
That's the idea.
What do you want me to do about it?
I got the evidence we was going to use to blackmail the Porters over in my room.
And you're willing to let it go for less than $50,000?
I'm willing to let it go for nothing. I want to turn it over to you fast so you can tell the killer, whoever it is, that I'm out of business.
Okay, Mr. Bliss. It's a deal.
This is my room here, Commissioner.
Dark.
Oh, it's on a 2x4 air shaft, lady.
Come on, Maggio.
Hey, how about some lights, huh?
Wait till I strike a match. I ain't been here long enough to find the switch by hand.
The slugs cut Bliss down so fast, the match in his fingers was still lit when he hit the floor. I grabbed for the light switch, but before I could get it, the killer was out of the window. And Maggio was after him down the fire escape. Libby found the switch, and together we bent over the body.
Who could have done it, Bill?
Somebody we know, Libby, looking for something they don't want anybody else to see.
The blackmail evidence.
What else?
You think they took it?
Maybe they took it, and maybe they burned it.
What do you mean, Bill?
The ashes in this fireplace are still warm. Notice?
Oh.
Empty that pitcher into the washstand, will you?
Why?
Go on, go on.
Okay.
Now, give it to me. Thanks.
Anything else I can do?
Yes. You can help me see to it that Bliss's death doesn't break print for 24 hours.
Why?
Reasons.
Oh. Are there reasons for you to be putting those ashes into that pitcher, Bill?
Mm-hmm. I want to take them back to the laboratory for the boys to play with.
How much can they tell you?
I don't know exactly. But I'll have the report tomorrow morning. I didn't see Maggio until the next day. Whoever went out of that window at Bliss's place had led him a wild goose chase that landed him nowhere. When he walked into my office, he looked a little worn.
Oh, Commissioner, this thing's got me punch drunk.
Is that so?
Yeah, what are you feeling so good about? What's this stuff in the box here?
Ashes.
Ashes?
Yes, Sergeant, ashes. Looks like whoever murdered our two blackmailers burned the evidence in the fireplace at Bliss's. Just before we walked in yesterday.
And then we're through.
Unless they're copies of that evidence.
Well, you think they are?
I don't know. But the other side doesn't know either. Maggio, give me that pad.
Yeah. Well, what are you writing?
An item for the personal column. There we are.
Notice, Mr. Bliss, your photostats are ready.
Put that in the noon edition.
Oh, I get it. You figure they'll come looking for the photostats.
Why shouldn't they? After two murders, they wouldn't want any loose copies kicking around.
But this ad ain't got no address, Commissioner.
What about it?
Well, there's a half a dozen places in town that make photostats.
Whoever is sufficiently interested, Maggio, will make all the rounds.
Oh, and all we gotta do is be in half a dozen places at once, huh?
No, we'll just pick one of the half dozen places and wait. Old man Schmidt, for instance, he's got a nice back room over at his photostatic service. And he's also sharp enough to understand an angle.
I see.
So I'll tell you what. I'll meet you there at 12:30. And Maggio, bring along a deck of cards. When we got to Schmidt's photostatic shop, we primed the old man, and then we played cards, stashed in the back room where we could have a full view of the proceedings. At 2:14... the door opened, and who walked in but Mrs. Porter?
I've come for the photostats, Mr. Schmidt.
Photostats?
Yes. Mr. Bliss sent me.
Oh, yes, Mr. Bliss.
May I have them, please?
Well, now I'm afraid I can't give them to you without a note from Mr. Bliss.
But you've got to... I mean, would it be all right if I could describe the contents?
Yes, after all, if you know what they are, Mr. Bliss has probably taken you into his confidence.
It's a photograph. A police photograph of the lineup in Detroit, Michigan. There's a woman in a white dress, third from the left.
I see.
May I have it now, please?
I'm afraid not.
But you said if I could describe the content...
But you haven't, my dear woman. I don't have a photo start of any such photograph.
Oh.
However, there are a couple of gentlemen in the back room who would like to talk to you.
What?
When Mrs. Porter saw us sitting in that back room, she was petrified. But when we explained the operation to her, she calmed down a little. And then, not 10 minutes later, the door opened again. And in came another customer for the non-existent photostats.
And you say Mr. Bliss sent you?
Yes, he said I should pick them up for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, could you describe the contents?
You've seen them yourself?
I had to, my dear. I made the copies.
Well, then you know. I'm the girl Mr. Porter wrote the letters to. I'm Mildred Connors.
I see. And what is the nature of the letters, Miss Connors?
Do I have to go into that?
Well, if you want the photostats, otherwise
okay,
I might...
Okay. They're love letters. We, Mr. Porter and I, were planning to run away together. Correct?
Correct. There you are. Stay in this envelope.
Thanks. And now I've got something for you.
Hey, put that gun away.
I can't help myself, Mr. Schmidt. You made me describe the letters, and now you know too much.
You wouldn't kill me in cold blood.
I'm afraid I have to. You know as much as either Bliss or Langford knew, and I had to kill them. All right, Mr. Schmidt, back into that room.
Grab her, Maggio!
What is this? Let me go!
No, Miss Connors, I'm afraid we're going to have to hold you.
What?
On a charge of murder.
I'm awfully proud of you, Bill.
Oh, that was a walk away, Libby.
But how did Mr. Schmidt know that Mrs. Porter's description of the photostats was wrong?
Because Mrs. Porter was describing a photograph, and the lab report showed there was no trace of emulsion in those ashes.
Oh, I see. Poor thing. She thought Bliss and Langford had that picture of her all the time.
Sure. Her husband saw to that. He played on her guilt to make her think the blackmailers were hounding her instead of him and his Mildred.
That was a great trick of his. Confessing to the murder.
He's a slick customer. He knew he was safe. He was certain somebody would establish that alibi of his before we went on trial.
Well, I must admit he fooled me a little.
Well, that's okay. You're looking awfully pretty tonight, Libby.
Well, thank you, sir.
Anybody who's as pretty as you are, young lady, doesn't have to be right all the time.
Well, thank you. Well, what do you mean, Bill Grant? I was right from the start.
You were?
Of course. I said in the first place that Mildred was an overt hysteric, which implies psychologically that she's capable of pulling a trigger. And you see, she committed both the murders. Whereas Mr. Porter is psychologically completely innocent.
Libby, Porter is legally guilty as an accomplice.
Now, Bill, you've got to admit I'm right, or you'll spoil my dinner.
Okay, I admit it.
Mildred's an obvious case. She's a very pretty girl. And very pretty girls this day and age get away with murder.
Yes, sweetheart, they certainly do.
Police Commissioner Bill Grant will be back in just a moment with the Lever Brothers Police Award of Valor. But first... Rinso White and Rinso Bright. Rinso gives a dazzling wash every time. But you know, ladies, a smart detective checks his sources of information. And maybe you'd like to know how I'm so sure Rinso's tops.
I, for one, would, Mr. Sims. Where do you get your information?
From two authoritative sources. One from the fact that millions of American women prove their preference for Rinso by asking for it time after time. Two, from the fact that only Rinso has the recommendation of the makers of 33 leading washers. And no wonder, for Rinso's triple action formula contains a special soapy-rich base, an amazing suds booster, and a marvelous grease chaser. So you can be sure Rinso will give you dazzling results. A Rinso white wash...
with ease.
A Rinso bright wash...
with safety.
¶¶
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Commissioner Grant. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to present the Lever Brothers Award of Valor to an outstanding policeman and the Lever Brothers Plaque of Honor to his police department, selected by Chief Peter J. Sicardi, lifetime member of the Executive Board of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Tonight, the Award of Valor goes to motorcycle patrolman Robert A. Barons of the Cleveland, Ohio Police Department. While on patrol duty, Barons spotted smoke and flames leaping from a neighboring house. Rushing to the scene of the fire, he attempted to enter the front door and two side entrances, but each time he was driven back by the fire. But in spite of the flames, and at the risk of his life, he finally forced entrance through the rear door, and he was able to save the lives of the entire family. To you, Patrolman Robert A. Barons, for your outstanding heroism and unselfish devotion to duty, goes $100 and this week's Lever Brothers Award of Valor. And to the entire Police Department of Cleveland, Ohio, under the able direction of Chief George J. Matowitz, goes the Lever Brothers Plaque of Honor for their unfailing efforts in protecting the people of their community.
Call the Police stars Joseph Julian as Bill Grant and Joan Tompkins as Libby.
I never realized why Pete would never go to lunch with me until I happened to overhear that whisper.
You can't like a man with B.O.
Stop those whispers. Take a daily bath with Lifebuoy. Lifebuoy is the only soap especially made to stop B.O. Scientific tests prove that a daily bath with Lifebuoy helps build up increasingly better protection against B.O. Play safe. Bathe with Lifebuoy. You don't want people to whisper,
B.O.
Get Lifebuoy.
Be sure to be with us next Tuesday night when Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Rinso, bring you another exciting, realistic police case. Next week, the case of the kidnapped killers. Tonight's script was written by Peter Barry. Music was composed and conducted by Ben Ludlow. Jay Sims speaking.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from the shows you heard today and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Past episodes of Case Closed, all the other shows, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button is there as well. If you like this and all the shows, would like to help support them, give that button a click. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always appreciated. My thanks as always to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with Danger with Granger and Dragnet. Another episode of Case Closed.